listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today we're live November 4th, a day before the election. The tension is high. We don't know what the hell is going to happen to this country tomorrow, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. You know, I'm just afraid there's going to be shit going on, but we'll see. You know, I don't want to think about it too much. I'm totally stressed out from all this, which I'm sure most people are these days. So we're going to get to our guest. We have a very special guest, and his name is Adam Newman. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you. Thanks, Sam, for having me.
Of course. And Adam is part of an event called Infinity Festival, and we're going to talk all about it. It sounds very exciting. And if you guys can make it November 6th through 9th, which is later this week, you guys, I think, are going to actually be very impressed in what's going on. And I heard a little bit. I saw it on the website, so you guys can check it out. In the meantime, it's infinityfestival.com. Adam, yep. Thank you for joining us. So we're going to find out all about the event, but let's find a little bit about you first so we can get comfortable and everything.
Sure.
So you were telling me you're not originally from L.A., right? Where did you grow up?
No, I grew up in New York in the suburbs outside of the city. Mm-hmm. Went to school in New York and then worked in the city for about a year in fine art photography. Mm-hmm. I wanted to work in television, so I moved to Los Angeles.
Sounds good.
Yeah, on kind of a whim.
Oh, yeah?
And I didn't know if I'd be here more than a month, and that was 34 years ago.
Wow. That's usually the story, you know. Yeah. Had you been here before? Did you visit it before?
Nope.
No, huh? You just kind of took off and
never
moved
visited.
Here.
Never visited.
Wow, that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, I had some friends that lived here, and that made it a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. But I actually started to work right away in TV. And funny story, I was very into a show that was on NBC at the time called The Hogan Family. Mm-hmm. It was a sitcom with Jason Bateman. And I thought, I want to work on it. Uh-huh. So I found out where they shot it. What is Sony now? It was called Columbia Pictures at the time. And I snuck into the lot behind a group of businessmen.
Really?
And I found out where the commissary was. I went there and ate. And then I asked somebody at the commissary where the production office for the Hogan Family was. Uh-huh. You know, ignorance is bliss kind of thing. I just didn't know that that might not be the best thing to do. But I walked in. Uh-huh. And the producer was looking for somebody to work as a PA, like, uh-huh, that day. And I got the job. And that started a career at Lorimar Television, which, mm-hmm, later became Warner Brothers Television.
Okay.
And I worked there for about 8 years.
Wow. So you really took it seriously and did what you had to do. You didn't go through the usual channels. You just kind of like snuck in.
I didn't. I made it happen for myself, I guess. I don't know if I would do something so brazen now, uh-huh, you know, after, you know, having a reputation and building a resume for so long. But it was, right, at the time, you're also young and you're desperate or, you know, you want to get in the business. And so I knew I had to make that happen for myself.
Wow. Were you always like this growing up? I mean, going after what you wanted and...
I was. I mean, I think I was, because I grew up right outside of New York City. Mm-hmm. I always had access to whatever I needed to find in New York. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was a different time where people weren't connected via the internet or via social media. So you kind of had to go explore and figure out how to get what you need or what you want.
Yeah.
And I definitely took advantage of that from a young age.
Very cool.
So California was a revelation for me, and I love it.
Wow. What was your childhood like? Do you have siblings?
I do. I have one brother, uh-huh, and he lives here, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he followed me to Los Angeles about 2 years later. Mm-hmm. And he...
Is he older, younger?
He's
than
younger.
Uh-huh.
And he raised his family here. Mm-hmm. I have a wonderful nephew and niece and sister-in-law. Wow. My nephew just started a school in University of Washington. So
really?
He's up there now, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And my niece is at Campbell Hall, which is right kind of adjacent to this neighborhood.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And what does your brother do now?
So my brother is a writer and editor, and he's going out with a script right now that is an original creation that he wrote. He's written on TV shows. He is also a documentary filmmaker and made a film about the rock star Dave Navarro called Morning Sun, which is on Apple TV. He's also edited many Jane's Addiction videos, and he's a photographer as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very talented family. Were your parents like in the industry sort of?
No, my parents were really insane. And I grew up in a dysfunctional family.
Really?
My brother and I escaped and took all that and made it and spun it into gold.
Wow. Wow. Jeez. You don't hear that very often, you know?
But insane in a good way. Yeah, we had a lot of, we always had a lot of comedy and music, and there was, it wasn't a traditional household, but we were always encouraged to like any kind of art, any kind of music, and that resulted in an obvious transition for both of us.
Yeah. Did you go to college at all?
Yeah, I went to Hunter College in New York City, and I studied studio art.
Did you always feel you were an artist?
Always.
Yeah?
Always, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Always. And in addition to my role at Infinity Festival, I'm also a fine art photographer, and I've had shows here in Los Angeles. I have pieces in collections, private collections, and I have pieces in corporate offices.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Wow. So how old were you when you moved to L.A.? You said a few.
I was 24.
24 years old.
Yes.
Wow. So your whole life was ahead of you. You decided I'm moving to where the movies are.
Yes.
Where all the art is.
Exactly.
And although there's a lot going on in New York too, right?
But yes, but at the time I moved here, I was more focused on television.
Okay.
And it, I have to tell you, it was very exciting. Just driving on to the Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah.
You know, driving through the gate, seeing celebrities, just walk to the commissary. A few years later, I wound up working on a show there called Sisters, which was a drama series on NBC. And it ran for like 6 years. So I was on the show the whole time. And it was the same time that Friends was starting. There were a lot of very exciting TV shows made at Warner Brothers at the time. So I mean, just every day driving onto the lot, I never lost that enthusiasm of of the business and of Los Angeles. You know, now it's all very different. They shoot many shows not in Los Angeles, and streaming has really changed the business.
Yeah.
And hence Infinity Festival.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that as soon as you want. But that, you know, I like thinking about the difference between old Hollywood or recent Hollywood and what's going on now.
So it's changed quite a bit. You've seen it change.
I think so. I also think just culturally, Hollywood holds a different value now, maybe for the young people that come here. I know that many young people come and they want to work at X, or they want to work at a streaming service or Google. There's a lot of tech that provide very good jobs for young people with the right qualifications, obviously. Yeah. But I don't think everybody comes here and they want to drive through the gate at Warner Bros. I think they want that great job at Google, where the culture is very modern. And it's on the West Side, and there's different attractions. Yeah. When I was here, when I first moved here, it was three networks, movies, independent films, and the business was smaller.
Yeah.
And how they made things was a little different, because now there's technology and people don't shoot things on 35 millimeter film anymore. You know, so I know I'm dating myself, but I like all of it. I like that I got to experience the old way that they made television and the way that they make television now.
Yeah.
I think it's really all terrific.
Right. So when you got to Warner Brothers, what was the first position you got?
So it was called Lorimar Television at the time.
Okay,
it was purchased by Warner Brothers after that. But right. I was on a series called Sisters,
right,
like I mentioned earlier. And
what
was
the capacity? Were you acting in it?
No. I was a production assistant.
I see. Okay.
And then, which was a great experience. I thought of the whole thing is going to graduate school, right? Because here I am on this big campus. I'm learning everything every day. And that was a single camera series. So they shot it in pieces every day. It wasn't like in front of an audience with multi cameras. So it was like going to film school for me. Everything I know, I learned from working on that series.
Wow.
And because it was a series that ran for a number of years, I was able to keep moving up. And by the end of the show, I was the production supervisor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you prefer behind the scenes, not necessarily acting, right?
Oh, Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Have you tried acting at all? Have you had any interest in it?
No.
No, huh?
Mm-mm.
That's very interesting, you know?
No,
most
I mean,
people are like, yeah, I want to act, you know, let other people worry about it. But you like the business side of it more, the production side, behind the scenes.
I do. I do. I have more experience in that. But also, you know, just because I know from being in the business, you have to have such a thick skin and be prepared. I mean, we get rejections all the time still. I'm not even an actor, you know, and yeah. I don't know that I would want to live with all the ups and downs that a career like that requires. And also the scrutiny, yeah. you know, having to worry about how I look every minute. And it feels like it would be a burden. It maybe when you're younger and everything seems a little easier. Now I'm glad I never did it.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm glad I put my stock elsewhere. And actors are the most talented people in the world. And if you're a talented actor, you will find that. And you'll find your career. I'm talented at other things. I never thought of myself as talented as an actor. Because I've worked with real like Swoosie Kurtz and George Clooney. And I've worked with big people who went on to big careers. And I understand that that's a talent that I don't have.
Yeah. I know I often felt the same way, you know. I mean, I used to do, like, high school theater and stuff like that. But, you know, I realized I can't play other people, you know.
Yeah.
I can only do myself.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm in radio, you know. But
and, you know, it's magical, too, because when you work in television, especially on a single-camera series, and you're making a film a week, basically, mm-hmm. and delivering a film to a network each week, you have to do things like super fast. You know, like sometimes when people are movie stars or have done film and then they go to a TV show, they're shocked at how fast everything is because you have to shoot everything in 7 or 8 days, right?
Yeah.
And I think that you get to, when you're in that situation, you get to experience people at their best.
Mm.
Like I've worked with writers that are so talented that when a scene isn't working, somebody has to go down and figure it out and write it. And they do, and it just comes like right out of their head, through their hand, on the pen, and onto the paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's a talent. You know,
yeah.
like not everybody can do that. And television finds those people because they have to keep doing that for, you know, for 9 months out of the year. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
And to be able to make something work like that, it's art.
Yeah.
And I don't have that, you know, in that capacity.
Yeah, I understand. I
it's tough.
Understand. But you like to work in art and in that kind of environment, right?
I do, yes.
And plus you're talented. I mean, you do photography and all that stuff. So it's not just like, you know.
I do. You know, things transfer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before Infinity Festival, I wasn't a creative director.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew what it required. And I think a lot of my skills that I learned through television definitely became applicable to what I do now.
See.
Everybody's creative process is a little bit different, but you know, things like understanding the structure of how a good script works is applicable to sending out an email that is broken down in three, you know, in my mind it's broken down in three acts and then it works, you know.
Yeah.
So there's definitely skills that you learn working in a creative environment that you can apply to another creative environment.
Yeah. How long were you at Warner Brothers, did you say?
I was there for about 8 years.
That's a long time to
yeah.
be in one job.
It, well,
I mean,
well,
especially back then, right?
Right. And then after that series had ended, after Sisters had ended, I did development for the executive producers. So I was working in development.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left Warner Brothers and had a development deal at Sony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what did you do at Sony? I mean, development and so forth. But how many years were you there?
At Sony?
At Sony.
Just two.
2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you do there?
At Sony, I worked for a film director called Gary Fleeter.
Uh-huh.
He had a company called Mojo Films, and I ran his TV division.
Okay.
So I found material to develop as television series.
Right. Very exciting. You
yeah.
know, I mean, you're a very ambitious person. You know, you go
Thank
after
you.
Things, and many people would like to be able to do that. You know, I mean, in this town, it's very hard to get in the door, let alone grow and work so many years for major companies, you know. So
yes, I've definitely been fortunate. I you know, I think everything is hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think everything in life is difficult. So this is just kind of my journey.
Yeah. Hold on a second. How is it possible the stream is not working? You know what? Let me hold on a second. This is really weird. Let me take out the app real quick and see what's going on, because it's impossible. It's showing me that it's working, you know, so I don't know. Let's see what's going on. You see? So it's running. Maybe they're not listening in the right place. Yeah. I give you the link for the live one, right? It should be able to work. I don't know. Wow. Do you want me to send it to you again? No, I think you have the right one. Well, at any rate, if they're missing this, it's going to be on archives. You guys are going to be able to download the show later and
great.
Put it wherever you want, you know?
Okay.
I'm sorry. I wish. But all our listeners are here, so I can see a lot of people are listening, so we're good.
Woo-hoo.
We're good. Now, let's try and focus back at what we were talking about. So, okay, so you were at Sony, and then what happened after that?
So after that, I was hired by the same producers that I worked on Sisters with to work on a show called Queer as Folk, which was a drama series on Showtime.
I remember that. It was very popular.
Very popular.
Yeah.
We shot that in Canada, and the writing staff was here in Los Angeles. And I was a producer on that for 4 seasons.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was a good show.
Yeah. Very then, nice. So,
yeah.
So, and then after that?
After that, I was a little bit older and a little disconnected from television. It's a young people's business, you know, so it became, the jobs became a little bit harder to come by.
Wow,
so I start with my partner, Mark, who is the CEO and founder of Infinity Festival. We went out on our own and formed a company and sold a couple of pilots. Nothing went to series, but we were continuing television development.
I see. And that was before Infinity?
Yes, it was before Infinity.
I see. Okay.
And then that led us to, in a very sort of backdoor way, but we wound up in product development. Mm-hmm. And we created a brand with an animation studio called Creative Capers out here in the Valley. They're the largest independent animation studio that Disney contracted that's outside of Disney. They're a wonderful, talented group of people, friends of ours. And we created a project called Birthday Land. Mm-hmm. And Birthday Land was the legend of where a birthday wish goes when you blow out a candle.
Wow.
So we had a whole story about you blow out your candle, and that carries the wish up to Birthday Land, and that's where your birthday wishes come true.
Wow,
so
cute.
We created a whole universe and launched a product that was 16 stuffed toys, like plush animals that were original creations.
Based on the series?
Based on the story.
On the story, okay.
We launched it at Toys R Us, and we had end caps. I don't know, for the people that know retail, getting an end cap is a big deal. And then it was picked up as a movie by STX Studios.
I see. Wow.
So we sold it as a movie.
Yeah. Was that 3D or 2D animation?
It would have been a combination, but the movie didn't get made. It went into turnaround and for a bunch of reasons, because the studio had a not so great experience with an animated movie that was before us. We wound up having the rights back.
Right.
And so then Mark went, Mark Lieber, who unfortunately isn't with us. He normally would be, and he's sad that he couldn't be here, but we have our festival starting on Wednesday.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So there's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of balls in the air right now. But Mark had, from that project, Mark had had an opportunity to work on something called the VR Society. Mm-hmm. And this was in 2017 when VR was sort of a hot ticket. And he did an event called VR on the Lot, which was at Paramount Studios. And what he did was he brought together all the talent and all the major players that were in VR at the time. And that event existed of like exhibits and panels and thought leaders and people that were really driving the VR industry. And because that event was such a success, he was asked to do that event in New York at the top of the World Trade Center. So there was a second event called VR in the Sky. And then from that, there was another event. People from Sotheby's were at that event and wanted to do an event called The Art of VR, which was held at Sotheby's in New York. So those three events sort of launched the Infinity Festival.
I see. And you started getting into technology more.
Yes.
And things like that.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
Yes. So we were, you know, at that time in 2017, we were able to see, you know, how the business was moving more towards technology and that technology and Hollywood were becoming one.
Right.
So the idea, the genesis of Infinity Festival was to make an event in Los Angeles that's sort of like a South By or just like synonymous with the city. The same way that Sundance is synonymous with Park City, Utah, and that Art Basel is synonymous with Miami. We wanted to be entertainment and technology synonymous with Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So we kicked off Infinity Festival at the Paley Center in Beverly Hills, which mm-hmm. is now the Mr. Brainwash Museum on the corner of Beverly and Little Santa Monica, uh-huh. that beautiful Richard Meyer building. Uh-huh. The whole conceit of that festival was to make it like a Sundance, where people would walk around the city with name badges on and go to different venues and experience different things. That was a very ambitious event. There were like 200 screenings. There were panels. There were exhibitions and thought leaders. But what we discovered was that people in Los Angeles don't like to walk. They like to have everything in one venue.
We have the car culture here.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly. It was hard to get people from the Paley Center over to the Writers Guild Theater on Doheny. Yeah. So so what we did was we were expanding and we moved the event to Hollywood at a place which is now called Naya Studios, but was at the time called Goya Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And we were right in the heart of Hollywood. Naya Studios is a terrific facility. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's sort of a tucked away little gem on Cahuenga Boulevard, mm-hmm. in between Sunset and Selma.
Okay.
And they have three sound stages. They actually have built out the property behind them, which was the Hornburg Jaguar Service Center.
Mm-hmm.
And now they own the whole block.
Mm-hmm.
And they've built this state-of-the-art facility that's absolutely incredible. But anyway, we were at Naya Studios for 2019.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very successful event. And then in 2020, the pandemic happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we were lucky enough to be able to put the event on virtually. So we had the same amount of sponsors, the same amount of speakers. We basically replicated the festival in an online format.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was remote.
Yeah. Was that successful?
It was very successful.
Uh-huh. Because that time was a terrible time, you know? I mean,
terrible.
We couldn't do anything. People couldn't be together. Everything had to be virtual and online and stuff.
Awful.
Yeah.
Awful time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could have killed the business. It could
yeah.
have just killed our event totally. But we were lucky that we were sponsored by people who really believed in our project and that wanted us to continue and saw that there was still going to be a market for people to see it.
Right.
So we went ahead and did a very ambitious event. It was live streamed over, it was streamed over 8 weeks. So for 8 weeks, once a week we had programming.
Wow, that's a big undertaking.
Big undertaking. Yeah. But we made it happen, and it was great. And then that pushed us ahead to Infinity Festival 2021,
mm-hmm.
which was, again, held at Goya Studios, now Naya.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a terrific event.
Were people able to be together then?
People were able to be together, but it was a strange year because they had lifted the ban or I don't remember exactly the chronology of it, but there was a period where there were no masks required, and then like right after the festival they said you have to go back to masks and no, you know, standing 6 feet apart and all that kind of thing. So we just got in that window where people were allowed to be, but people were tentative, you know, they weren't sure whether they should attend things live. So we did that one as a hybrid event, and it was streamed and it was in person.
I see. Okay. What are some of the so you have conferences there, right? I mean, presentations and things like
yes,
that.
Yes,
right?
We do.
What are they about? What are some of the topics?
So we try to we talk about obviously technology and entertainment and how they affect each other. Mm-hmm. This year we're going to be at the Astor, which I don't know if you're familiar with the Astor Club, but it's a beautiful space on Vine Street, mm-hmm. across from the Capitol Records building, and we're going to be at the Avalon Hollywood, which is an old historic theater that's next door.
Right. So are they next to each other? Those two.
They are next to each other. Yes.
I see.
Correct.
Okay.
The
so
Astor,
now people don't have to walk far.
They don't have to go anywhere. They could stay at the Astor and never leave the building.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a beautiful event, actually, because we're using a production company called PRG, mm-hmm. and they've just kind of electrified the whole building. Our main stage is an LED screen that wraps around a whole room,
wow.
on both sides.
Nice.
So the design is incredible. And the Astor is a very unique boutique sort of space. It's a hotel. They have a rooftop that has a beautiful Lemon Grove restaurant. You're looking literally right at the Capitol Records building. The view is insane. You could see all of Hollywood.
Right.
So we're going to kick off with our party there, our opening night party on Wednesday. And then the rest of the festival will continue at the hotel. We have three stages there that have been built for us. And, the festival is basically panels, exhibitions, screenings. We have thought leaders. We have influential people in both entertainment and technology. This year, we have a lot of special guests. We have the writers of the film, of the TV series Shogun.
Mm-hmm.
They just won an Emmy for Best Drama Series.
Wow.
Rachel Kondo and Justin Marks.
Yeah.
We have Agbo Studios, which is the Russo brothers. They have directed most of the Marvel movies. And Rob Legato, who is a visual effects genius and sort of known in the industry as the king of visual effects, he is going to participate in the festival, but also he's being given a Lifetime Achievement Award by us. We have an event called the Monolith Awards, mm-hmm. Which we've done every year. And this is an award that goes to a person who's driving, or a company that's driving technology forward, mm-hmm. and enabling the future of storytelling.
I see.
So Rob is going to receive a Lifetime Achievement Award. I don't mm-hmm. think that's giving anything away.
Yeah.
But we have about 10 or 12 categories, and we're going to have a big ceremony on Friday night for the festival.
Wow.
One thing that's very special to us this year on the exhibition side is we're partnering with Julian's Auctions. I don't know if you're familiar with Julian's, but they are the number one auction house for pop culture and Hollywood memorabilia.
Oh, okay.
And they've like auctioned off John Lennon's guitar, like major big ticket items. We attended an auction recently where they had Marilyn Monroe's dresses and Hugh Hefner's robe, like very, very famous, unique items. And we're partnering with them this year to do a Star Trek exhibit. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be around 200 items, including things like the phaser gun from the original series, which only two exist. The communicator from the original series, which was like basically the blueprint for a cell phone.
Yeah.
And we have costumes from the films. We have scale models of the Enterprise. All of this is going to be at exhibit at the festival, and then we'll culminate with a live auction at the end.
Yeah.
And these are very big ticket items. They're going to go for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta have devoted trickies,
yeah.
you know, but
yeah.
there's a lot of them. There's a
exactly,
lot of
exactly. Hopefully everybody will come and see the festival and see the Star Trek exhibit.
Yeah. So the festival is going to be on November 6th through 9th.
Yes.
Right.
Correct.
That's what, Wednesday through Saturday.
Correct.
Okay. And, so people can find out more at infinityfestival.com.
Yes.
Right? They can register,
please.
And buy tickets.
Yes.
And everything. I noticed you guys are covering AI and stuff. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we like to sort of have an overall arcing theme for each year at the festival. We've done, you know, Metaverse was a couple of years ago when that was a buzzword. This year we're focusing on AI, which everybody is. We feel that there's a lot of potential in the use of AI, especially in regards to entertainment. We're not scared of AI. We're not judging it. We're trying to embrace it. We're going to have panels that where people will talk about embracing it as a tool to push filmmaking into a new era.
Yeah.
I have a little anecdote that I normally tell. I was, you mentioned that I'm a photographer and an artist, and I was super afraid of AI when I first heard about what it could do, and especially with generative AI, making images. So I did some exploration myself and started to make some things using generative AI, and I realized that AI is a tool the same way a camera is, right? Like if you're making a photograph, you're not doing anything. You're pressing a button on a machine to make something for you. And AI is the same thing. You're prompting it to make something specific. You know, the art in a photography, in a photograph happens in a split second that the camera opens its shutter. You're telling it to do that at a specific moment. And it's the same with AI. You know, you have to direct it into making what you need. And when you discover that, it becomes a wonderful tool.
Right.
You know, of course, anybody could do bad things with anything.
Right. A lot of people are seeing that as a threat, you know?
Yeah.
And I look at it as like a paradox because on the one hand, you don't want it to spread too fast, too much.
Right.
So it replaces people or even
right.
turns on human beings.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you stop or slow down the development, your enemies are going to continue. You know, I mean, China is not going to stop,
no.
you know, we're developing all this stuff. So we're just going to be limiting ourselves
exactly.
if we don't continue moving at full speed.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, AI is there. It already exists. It's not going to, it's not going to go away. There's no such thing as technology moving backwards. You know, it
right.
only moves forwards. And I think we absolutely control it. It's not going to control us. But we've had Infinity Festival also does monthly events where we reach out to the student community and we have a person who is a movie producer or a film editor or whatever come talk to students and tell them stories just like I told you about how they first came to Los Angeles and how they got to be where they are. And many of them talked about AI and they talked about the time that it saves, you know, when you're rendering something out or when you're in pre-viz on something, AI can save days, you know, and hours. And I think the benefits are going to outweigh the fear that people have. I'm sure that when television was first introduced to the public in the 50s, or even earlier than that, but when it became mainstream in the 50s, the studios that make films were panicking because they thought, you know, this is the death of film. But that's not what happened, you know.
Right.
There's still books, there's still films, there's still television.
And then it happened with VCRs and with computers.
Yeah.
I guess there was always people fearing progress.
Right.
And technological progress. And it turned out okay.
Right, exactly. You know? Well, that's once you embrace it.
You know,
once you realize that it doesn't really replace something else, it just adds to what already exists.
Right.
So we have wonderful thought leaders and brilliant people who come and talk about AI in different capacities. And the panels are really the big piece of the festival. We have really amazing, brilliant thought leaders from throughout the community. And the reason why people come to the festival is because we offer access to these people in sort of an intimate, cool LA setting.
Right.
We're not just a corporate conference in a hotel room in Long Beach. Not nothing bad about Long Beach, but I'm just saying that we're not like an airport conference center.
Okay.
And we try to give it a sort of LA vibe, mm-hmm. and in a really terrific setting. And for people that need to network or meet with or talk to these people that are really pushing the boundaries in technology and entertainment, this is the place where everybody meets.
Yeah. Very interesting. You know? I mean, it's so timely. You know?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, traditionally we're a business to business. You know, like we have most of the C-suite executives that are CTOs and that level of person that attend the festival, but we're open to the public that anybody can buy a ticket. Anybody could come.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
Yeah. And so people do. People do that are either looking to break into the business or looking to connect with people that that are already in the business. And so they come and they have a great time and they love being there.
Yeah, I can see a lot of potential in coming there and meeting people.
Yeah.
You just rub shoulders with important people.
Exactly,
you know,
exactly.
People that are significant.
Yeah.
And they know what they're talking about,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So are there people coming from Silicon Valley? And
yes,
like
absolutely.
That? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like NVIDIA and
yes. So the most important thing that I probably should have mentioned at the top is that our title sponsors are Z by HP, NVIDIA, and Intel. So NVIDIA, they've been with us since day one. And so has Z by HP, and we have a very close relationship with them. And you know, NVIDIA is AI right now.
Right.
You know, they're
right.
like gangbusters right now. So
yeah. They've become the largest company in the world when the stock was at its highs like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're really proud of them, and they're proud of us, and we hope to continue the relationship with them.
Yeah,
they're doing our keynote, and. And they're actually, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not, but they're going to be given an award to NVIDIA.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, I've been buying stock and selling stock of NVIDIA, and it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
I mean, it's like you can't do wrong with that.
Yeah,
and,
very smart.
But I'm just thinking that I knew of the company like, you know, 20, 30 years ago when they were making graphics chips for computer games and stuff. And I'm thinking, God, if only I knew what I know now about the company, you know, and many people did, you know, people bought stock back then in the company, and today they're millionaires, you know?
I know,
I mean, the stock has multiplied so many times, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, so very influential company right now.
I know, now I'm depressed that I didn't buy any NVIDIA stock. Thank you.
I know, well, you know, what are you going to do, you know? I got into it kind of late too, but it's never too late. You know, you can still buy.
Yeah.
A lot of experts are saying it still has a lot of room to grow, you know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so you can still, I think it's as good a stock as anyone, you know, and I've been very pleased with it, you know.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned gaming, though, because that's a big component to the festival and a big component to entertainment right now, actually,
yeah,
you know, with films being done in game engines and many things being done in game engine. And where Epic Games is going to be at the festival, they're sponsoring a dinner for us.
Major company.
Yeah. And we're going to have panels that that talk about gaming as well. We're going to have some experts from different companies. Yeah.
Nice. I used to be involved in the industry because I started a 3D animation computer company back in 1990.
When,
you know, it's like Photoshop had just come out that year. And I was doing things people weren't doing yet. You know, I was doing this stuff on a Mac, you know. At the time, there were like workstations, you know, like Wavefront and Alias workstations that cost like hundreds of thousands of dollars to create that animation.
Right.
And I found software for like $5,000 that I could do similar things on, you
right.
know. So I started, so I thought, well, I can't compete with the big guys, but let's go after a different market. So I started going after companies that wanted to feature their products, you know. I could create it in 3D, make it explode, show the different parts of it and everything, and visualize a lot of different things. And it was very successful, you know, and
I
got invited to Pixar when they opened an office in Orange County to see their products and a couple of other companies. But it, you know, the gaming company, so then when I closed the company, I moved to Vegas. There was a company called Westwood Studios back then.
Mm-hmm.
They were making like Command and Conquer, some major games.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there because I was one of the pioneers doing 3D and gaming and stuff. You know, they had a lot of 2D artists at the time, and they asked me to sit down and take those scenes and make them in 3D and stuff. So it was at the beginning, you know.
Exciting,
but that's why I fell in love with computer games and stuff.
Right.
And the rest is history, you know.
Yeah.
And today the games are unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And, you know, there's so much access to tools to make a game.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And
a lot of very talented people.
Very.
The software's gotten a lot more powerful, I gotta tell you that, you know.
I
mean, when I was doing this, we had a lot of rudimentary tools, and today it's what it can do for you is unbelievable. And I guess they've added AI to that as well, which helps them quite a bit.
Yeah.
I would imagine, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you know, you said that it's not going to turn on us and stuff, but I don't know. Sometimes I can't help but think of movies like Terminator and Matrix and stuff, you know, and think there's always going to be bad actors out there that could actually turn it against us. I mean, it's hard to fathom right now, but we're just at the beginning of this, you know?
Right.
It's so powerful.
Yeah, I feel like it's potential. An exciting time, actually.
It is.
To be, especially, you know, on the side, I've just created some art using only AI. I've actually submitted to a couple of juried shows recently, and they specifically say, like, no AI, you know, no. And I'm like, why? You know, like, yeah. I don't get that. But I think it's a very exciting time to be an AI because it is the beginning. You know, like the images that I create with AI right now are going to become so sophisticated that I'm not going to be able to get this raw look, you know, like again, that probably by next year it'll all be so super realistic or whatever it is. But I have to tell you, yeah, there's bad actors and everything. The Terminator is a movie, you know, it's not, it's not real. I'm not that worried about it. Yeah, but you know, if you think about it, if you weigh it, well, maybe AI could cure cancer and maybe AI could, you know.
Absolutely.
Maybe it could figure out some urban problems. Maybe it could figure out the homeless situation. You know, there's so many good things. I think, yeah, there's bad actors. But bad actors go to jail or, you know, hopefully go to jail.
Yeah, well, unless they're terrorists or something.
You know?
But let's not think about that. I don't want to go too far. It's depressing.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, I mean, like, actors now are worried about it, you know, because they're afraid it's going to take over.
Sure.
So what do you tell them?
I don't know what to tell actors, but I think, yeah, you want to be protective of your image. People have been stealing things from actors for a long time. It's not new, you know, like actors don't get paid for things that they should get paid for. That needs to be ironed out. I have a feeling that a lot of that was ironed out during the recent SAG after strike. And I think they figured out a way how to pay actors for stuff that would live in AI. I'm not really sure of the rules of that, so I don't want to speak to it. But I think that along with all the technology and all the advancements, there's going to be a need for rules to be in place, which I think they're figuring out now, like just like the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild did. I mean, everybody has to be aware of everything, you know, like you have to be aware of your, you know, what's going on online with you and me, like with our, you know, online identity or whatever, you know, anything can get stolen from anybody and used for bad purposes.
Yeah.
But hopefully, whatever administration we're in on Wednesday will be aware of providing guardrails for all of that.
Yeah.
And then we can really just enjoy the piece that's going to bring us brilliant filmmaking and brilliant entertainment.
Yeah. It's going to make us do a lot of things that we couldn't do before. You
exactly.
know, like this movie that's coming out with Tom Hanks and Robin Wright called Here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they made him look very young,
mm-hmm.
and it's so convincing, you know? I mean, they look like they did when they were young,
mm-hmm.
and then very old, and these are things that you need technology in order to do, you
mm-hmm.
know? You couldn't do them any other way,
mm-hmm.
and it's fascinating,
mm-hmm.
you know? It really is, you know? So
at the end of the day, you know, that all of that is great, and it makes for a great visual show, but you still need to have a compelling story. Like, that's the most important part of everything is that the story is great. Because if it's not, it doesn't matter how much, you know, effects you have or AI you use or whatever. If the story is not compelling, and I don't think, I'm not sure if AI is going to ever be able to tell like a real human, a story that comes from a human place.
Right.
That's just my guess. I don't know. Maybe it will.
I agree with you. You know, I mean, there's still things that human beings can do that you can't imagine a machine doing.
Right.
You know, and especially stuff that has to do with creativity.
Right.
And art and things like that.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, I've had this conversation with our person from NVIDIA,
mm-hmm.
A very nice back and forth conversation about, like, well, can AI create art?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's an attitude that, that machine learning will get to the point where it can have the same sort of backstory as a person, mm-hmm. and have the same amount of experiences and all of that as a person. I don't agree. I think even if, you know, if you put something into AI that you want, let's say you're doing an image generation, right? And you want to make a microphone and a headset at a desk, and you put that into AI and it spits a picture back to you.
Right.
And you don't like it, and you just put the same exact prompt in again, it's going to give you back a different picture.
Right.
You know, so I think that the, it doesn't, it, what I'm trying to say is, like, you are a specific person. I don't have the same experience as you in life, or Chris, or anybody. And AI is the same way. It's not going to give you the same thing twice. So it could never have, it could never have the same background as a person.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're just about out of time. Is there anything you want to add about the festival that we didn't mention?
I want to say please come. Okay. And I hope everybody can make it. Tickets are at infinityfestival.com. It's at the Astor, 1717 Vine Street. Starts on Wednesday evening and ends on Saturday afternoon. We're having Star Trek Saturday with the live auction of the Star Trek memorabilia with Julian's. And
So you guys have like a rooftop party or something, no?
We have a rooftop party. I don't want to publicize that too much because we're already on a wait list for that. But we have wonderful programming and exhibitions and everything for Thursday and Friday. And I encourage everybody to come. This is a great LA event. We're working very closely with the city of Hollywood, and they are very excited about this event to, you know, sort of bring up the level of events that happen in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it's a terrific event. Everybody says they don't want to leave. They kind of stay all day.
I can imagine. You know, I mean, it's not only is it interesting, but it sounds like fun too.
It's fun.
It's got a lot of things that people can relate to, you know?
Especially in this town, but also it's good people because Mark and I, we own this business and we don't want to deal with people that we don't like.
Right.
So we have a no jerks allowed rule. Yeah. And if we see that, it's not happening.
Yeah.
But
It's hard work to organize.
And we just love everybody who we work with, and everybody feels the same way. And so you experience that when you come to infinityfestival.com.
There you go. Adam Newman, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, Sam. This was great. I want to come back.
You're fun and interesting and fascinating and inspiring.
Thank you.
And I wish you all the best with the festival.
Thank you so much,
everybody,
Sam.
Check it out. And we thank Chris, who made it all possible.
Thanks, Chris.
And sitting here quietly, but definitely part of the whole thing. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.